Today on Coffee Roasting Legends. San Franciscan roasters Bill Kennedy speaks with Hrag Kalebjian of Henry's House of Coffee.
Welcome to the Coffee Roasting Legends podcast. My name is Bill Kennedy, and I'm the owner of the San Franciscan Roaster Company, where we manufacture high-end, artisanal specialty coffee roasters here in the United States, specifically in Carson City, Nevada. Over the years, I've had the privilege of meeting and learning from countless inspiring individuals, roasters, business owners, and coffee enthusiasts alike. On this podcast, I'll be sharing some of their stories, insights, and passion for coffee, exploring the craft, the culture, and the people who make coffee roasting truly legendary. Today, I'm joined by someone whose story truly represents craft and tradition, Hrag Kalebjian of Henry's House of Coffee. He's a third-generation roaster carrying forward his family legacy that began with his grandfather's bakery in Lebanon. We're going to talk about his journey and the role of heritage in his roasting and how Henry's continues to thrive in a changing coffee world. Hrag, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate it.
So you are truly a multi-generational coffee company, family, and I guess with a global history, because your family started in Lebanon and then eventually made it to San Francisco. Yep. But why don't you kind of give us a story of the history of kind of grandfather, your father, coming to San Francisco, and how long you've been where you're at in your location and what you're doing right now?
Yeah. So my father had this bakery in Lebanon in the 40s, and a way to attract customers was to serve Arabic coffee to the folks. You know, the industry calls it Turkish coffee. It's a very ethnocentric term. We call it Armenian coffee, but in Lebanon, you'd call it Lebanese coffee. And back then, there was no Costco or Target or Walmart to buy coffee. You had to actually roast it yourself. And the coffee would come from Colombia or Brazil. Those are like kind of the only ones. And you'd roast it yourself. There was no roasting machine at the time. It was done on a wok, kind of a similar wok. And then I think my father says that later on, my grandfather had kind of like a tumbling machine. I don't know what the term is, but the fire would be on the bottom and you turn the drum with your hand. You know, we're talking about a pound or two of coffee that was roasted. When my father was 12, you know, it's very typical for you to not finish school and help out with the family business. So I think my father was 12 or 13 and started working with my grandfather. And his job was roasting the coffee for the customers in the morning. And he has a couple of stories where my grandfather taught him a song while he was rotating that kind of that arm. And when the song finished, was an indication that the coffee had hit first crack or second crack. And to stop it from roasting and to pull it off. And then another funny story is, which is something that we put on the side of our coffee bags, is a story where my father's roasting and he burns his hand on the drum. And my grandfather says, "Oh, don't worry. Now the secret of coffee roasting is in your blood," like as a joke. And I thought that was really, really sweet. So that's kind of how my dad started. And then there was a war in the 70s. My entire family from both sides moved to the United States. My father had a background of roasting, but he was looking for a job. So he was working as a draftsman, actually, for a large company. And in the neighborhood, in the Armenian community, there was a man who owned a store, like a European goods store. And it was called House of Coffee. They sold specialty foods like jams, crackers, meats and cheeses, candies, but they also roasted coffee, which was very unique in the 60s and 70s. In my tradition, we refer to older folks as uncle or aunt, So my father refers to this gentleman as uncle, his uncle Andy. My father purchased the business from him in 1983, and it was called House of Coffee. And my father ran it the way it was, obviously with the coffee roaster, he knew how to do it. And then as coffee became a thing with Starbucks and locally a company called Peet's, my father made the decision in the 90s, early 90s, to switch from like a European goods store to fully focus on coffee and remodeled the shop, made it look like a typical coffee shop, and purchased a larger roasting machine by a really small company called the San Franciscan. And I think, Bill, your admin sent me the initial invoice that we had. I think it was in 1992 or something, yeah, where we purchased that coffee roasting machine from you guys back then. So that's kind of the legacy of, you know, where it was. And where I come in is, you know, I was in kindergarten when my dad bought the business. And I hated it growing up because it was, for me, the weekends were getting sucked into work by my dad dragging me. I wanted to watch He-Man and Scooby-Doo and cartoons. But my job was to pack coffee in the back where it was cold. There was no music, just boring stuff. So I didn't have this like connection with the business. And the other thing was my father felt like he had this amazing opportunity in the United States. He wanted his kids to get an amazing education. And he always focused on, you have to go to school, you have to go to college, and I want you to, quote unquote, be somebody. And so I was always in that mindset of, I'm going to go to school, graduate. And I went to UC Davis, and I majored in economics, and I did corporate finance for 10 years. And didn't join the business until July 1st of 2013. So that's kind of the background.
That was my next question, because I mean we know about your dad's transition into coffee roasting, and yeah, he was one of the company's first purchasers of roasters, and I know that he loved it, and yeah, he was special to us, to my family. You know, when we bought the company, we're going on 17, 18 years now that has been. Yeah.
The art of roasting coffee is all about chasing flavor. Every batch tells you something. The pace of the dry phase, how the beans respond to heat, how development time shapes sweetness and body. San Franciscan roasters are built by roastmasters. They speak your language with the responsiveness to follow your instincts, to push or pull heat at the right moment. Exactly when the coffee asks for it. Each San Franciscan roaster is handcrafted in the USA from 100% American steel, engineered for precision, balance, and that perfect control between conduction and convection that lets the coffee truly shine. Because great roasts aren't measured, they're tasted.
So I knew your father then, and I didn't know you yet. You must have been in the corporate world. I was going to ask it. Yeah. I mean, you already told us a little bit about your story, about where you went. And but there must have been something. I mean, what was it that brought you into the coffee world? That you made a career decision, and then there had to have been some kind of a catalyst for you to decide, okay, I'm going to do what my dad's doing.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So my last stint, I worked for AAA, the auto home insurance in California. I had a very unique role. I had a team. We were called Insights and Analytics, where we told stories about numbers. And it was a very fun role where we got to work with the sales agents, the boots on the ground, trying to understand what's happening with them. And then we would look at the data as well and understand what the data is telling us. And we'd have to take both of this data and information and present it to the executive team. I reported directly to the COO. Really smart man from New York, cocky, brash, but extremely intelligent. And the last 2 years when I was there, I was traveling a lot because we had different regional meetings and I had just had a baby boy, my third. And so I was traveling a lot. I wasn't at home often and I was busting my ass for the company and working really hard. The COO at the time was pushing the company hard. Executive team decided that he was becoming toxic and figured out a way to boot him out. And so in the corporate world, you have yearly reviews, typically around March. And my review came up, and the person reviewing me had never worked with me before. And in our world, we have a score of 1 to 5, a 5 being you're awesome, a 1 being you're fired. And I'd gotten 5 3 years that I've been there, and she gave me a 3. She had no idea what I had gone through the last year, how much work I had done. And it didn't affect my bonus. It didn't affect my pay. But it wasn't about that at all. It was the, you know, it's that stupid politics stuff. And that triggered something in me that really pissed me off. And I remember going home that day complaining to my wife and telling her, like, I need to make a decision if this is the path that I want to do. This is the corporate world. Now, what was going on 2 months before that, Bill, my father was getting up there in age. He had been talking to me and my sisters about, you know, how hard it is to keep working there. Now, granted, he worked till the day he died, and he would continue to do that. Mm-hmm. He loved it. But he was just talking about, what should I do? Should I sell it to one of the employees that I really like? Are there businesses that I could send it to? You know, he was thinking, not retiring, just trying to do something different. That's going on in January and February. Then here comes March with this meeting with this person who doesn't know who the hell I am. And it really pissed me off. Well, I'm a man of faith, and I prayed about it. And I asked God for a decision, like what I need to do. And I remember going back to the office and just like every single drive had just gotten out of me. Like I was so done. And I thought, that's not respectful to the company either. I don't want to be one of those people that's just kind of sitting there and not doing. And I said, if that's the way that you're going to be, you might as well do something else. And I was thinking of my dad and what a fantastic business, obviously, he had supported family. And e-commerce was a thing, obviously. And I thought, like, you know, my dad doesn't have a really good website. I feel like I could do something really good there. I've got good background history. What's the worst that I could do? Like, work there for 5 years. It doesn't work out. I could always go back to the corporate world. And so I decided to make the switch. July 1st, 2013, this is 3 months after my review, I made the switch and I started at Henry's.
You know, there are a lot of our clients have a very similar story. And I remember when I first started, my target audience at that point was, you know, there are people that, they are tired of working for Big Brother or big corporate, and they wanted to do something entrepreneurial. And I think you encapsulated really well what a lot of people are going through or will go through, you know, yeah. In terms of deciding, do I want to do this for the rest of my career and have, you know, live in the kind of like the world that you described, or do I want to make my own world?
Yeah.
And do that. And yeah, it's hard work, and probably in a lot of ways it's harder work.
Yeah.
But it's your work, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about going 5-5-5-5-3 either.
Yeah.
And then that ties into, but again, going back to the multi-generational and where your dad started in your coffee house there. And I remember, and I was hoping you could touch on this, because a lot of people who have been in coffee for a minute experience this. The neighborhood where your store is, Henry's House of Coffee, its demographic changed over the time between the time your dad took over and the time that you took over. And there were some pretty significant challenges which caused you to have to reimagine yourselves work toward meeting the community needs at the time.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that?
I'd love to, because that's such a good point. When my dad bought the business in 83, the area was actually predominantly European. And that's why it was a European goods store. That's why my dad and his uncle were selling candies and jams. But then those folks started to retire, pass away, and slowly but surely, the folks that were buying the buildings and moving into the area were predominantly East Asian, Chinese, Taiwanese, a little bit of Japanese, but mainly Chinese. And when my father switched to a coffee shop in early 1990, he said his business tanked a lot. And he was trying to figure out why people are not stopping by. And he would notice, he tells such a funny story about the Asian customers would walk by, they'd look inside, but then they'd keep going and they wouldn't come inside. And he was like, I know my product is good. You know, typically Chinese folks don't drink coffee, they drink tea. I also sell tea, but I have really good coffee. And so what he did was he hired somebody that spoke Mandarin and Cantonese. And he said, your job is to stand outside for 1 hour. You're going to have samples of coffee. And as these folks walk by, I want you to use your native language and explain to them that we brew coffee, fry it. But if you want milk and sugar, you got to come inside to like draw them in, right? And so he did that for a couple months, and sure enough, it worked. And because it's such a tight-knit community, you know, they all talk to each other. And slowly, over the next 5 years, business went up, and a big amount of our customers were East Asian. To this day, it's still the case. But when I started in 2013, I also noticed some things changing, just like my dad did in the 80s. I would remember I'd be looking outside, and I would see a young Caucasian girl in Lululemons walking a dog. That never happened in the Sunset District. That would happen in the marina, but not here. And as I was thinking about the business and the vision in the future, I thought to myself, you know, when my dad remodeled, it was probably 1993, it's 2013 right now. And if the Sunset District is changing, which I thought it was, and it had become the last affordable place, mm-hmm. There's going to be these young couples that are going to move here. They're going to walk by my shop, and they're like, oh, how cute, an old coffee shop. And that bothered me because I didn't want them to think of it as an old coffee shop. I wanted them to think about it as a classic legacy business, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, Dad, you know, I know this is tough, but we got to remodel the shop. And so in 2017, that's exactly what we did to keep it going because I noticed that the area had changed. It didn't mean that we were going to kick away the current customers, but I wanted them to come in along with the new folks. And you were talking about demand and the needs. Before we did that, I surveyed customers and asked them what they wanted. And they wanted three things: more seating. They wanted some more product, like breakfast product. And they wanted some more coffee options. And so that's what we did. And behind me is a picture of my shop right now. And that is what you need to do if you're a small business to continue to evolve and change, not change who you are, but pivot a little bit to adjust for the demographic that you're seeing.
I think that's, any kind of change or transition like that, it's a little bit scary. And I think other people find themselves in similar situations, but a couple of takeaways. One, I really appreciated your dad reaching out to the community that had basically evolved in the location where you're at. I think that initial outreach is important for someone to do to make that connection. And then secondly, the surveying that you did to find out what does the community want? And they described to you the place that they wanted to frequent, right?
Yeah.
And you made it for them.
Yep.
And so I remember that. Now your dad bought his first San Franciscan roaster. I think it was in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And then right about this time, the 2017, he upgraded. We made some design changes, and we brought that in. And I love your dad. He's one of the most gracious and loving. I mean, you instantly wanted to be his friend.
Thank you.
And you instantly wanted his approval. That's what kind of persona he projected.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And I felt that way too. I wanted him to be pleased. And yeah. We brought in the new roaster, and we hooked it up and did all the stuff. And then he turned it on. And I was sitting in your picture. I was sitting right about where that gentleman is there. I was sitting right about there, which is a great place to see the roaster from that vantage. And I was sitting there, and his shoulders sunk. And he turned around and looked at me. Because he turned it on, he thought nothing happened. And I said, he said, "Is it on?" I said, "It's on." And then his eyes got really big. "It's on?" Because he'd never heard such a quiet roaster. And he looks, he did three double takes. Looks at me, looks at the roaster, looks at me, looks at the roaster. And then it was so wonderful for me to see the excitement on his face. And for me, you know, as the owner of this company, to see that I was able to deliver that and bring that same little level of satisfaction that he was trying to bring and did bring, you know, to your community there.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to segue into the next thing. So you have a multicultural community there, but you're getting to the point now where, you know, your heritage and your history, you were reintroducing into your coffee house, especially with the Armenian style coffees, the darker roasts, and everything that went historically from where your heritage was originated from. Could you talk about that and your approach to coffee in your particular location and how your community there is responding to that?
Yeah. Man, that's such a really insightful question, because when I joined, obviously I jumped in and just started to understand the coffee industry and the business, everything from cleaning toilets, ringing up customers. But coffee was very interesting because I never drank coffee before I started working. And obviously working with my dad, I'm going to learn his style of roasting. But one thing that my dad was really good at was understanding what the industry is doing, because he always wanted to learn. And so after 2 months there, I went to Marin, where we had a local like coffee roasting training. Mm-hmm. And I went there. And as I was learning for about 2 weeks, I remember coming home and thinking, like, everything they're teaching me is the exact opposite of what my dad is teaching. It's completely different. Like, in that world, what my dad is doing is considered bad, like it's burning the coffee. And, you know, we're being in the industry for this long now, there's this philosophy in specialty coffee to take the essence of what coffee bean is, right? And the concept is, you know, we don't want to do a disservice to the farmers. Coffee's a cherry. We want to enhance those flavor profiles. We want to get that type of coffee into people's hands. That is, I think, what specialty coffee is about. But the juxtaposition is my father's roasting style is dark. It's blends, not as many single origins. And I had this fight inside of me of like, who am I? What are we going to be? And it's hard when you're seeing coffee roasters pop up every 5 minutes and they're doing rainbow lattes and competitions. This coffee's from, you know, here and there. And my dad's kind of like this steady, straight. And again, man of faith, I prayed about it. And my take on this is, I'm in the coffee industry because it's my family heritage. I'm not in it because it's something that is trendy or is a good business. And if I'm in it because of my family, then I want to honor what my father and my grandfather and my uncle have done. And I want to keep that. And when you look at the demographics in my area, they're not in the lighter roasted Maraguhipe, Guji. Like, that's not, they just want what I call coffee that tastes like coffee. Mm-hmm. And so being Armenian, on top of that, we don't do that either. We just want coffee. Like, all my grandmas, all they thought was coffee came from Colombia. They had no idea there was other countries that produced because in the old world, that's all they got, you know?
Yeah.
And exactly. So for me, that was great because I knew, like, I don't have to worry about all this other stuff. I'm going to focus on what my dad taught me, which is a classic dark roast, super smooth. And when you look at what the customers are telling me, they're reacting. Oh my God, I don't have to put milk or sugar in this. It's so smooth. I can drink it black. I never drink black coffee. Well, why the hell would I change it? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So that's what I focus on. That's my niche. A classic, quality, dark roast, super smooth. And it's really helped me kind of shape what lane to stay in. And that's what I focus on.
You know, I tell people your coffee is an inanimate object. We are not here to please the coffee. All right. We want to honor the farmer, of course. We want to honor every human process that where human hands are tangibly in the process. I think that's important because it's humanity that we're dealing with. And I absolutely love the story of your dad going out or hiring someone who can specifically reach the community, the specific community there, because that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And then the coffee facilitates that a lot.
Yep.
And you're right there. Now, I'm not going to bash anybody because right now I will say that however you're doing it, if you are meeting the community and cultural needs of where you're at, you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And if you're paying the bills, this or that, is there room for growth? Always, always room for growth, right? Sure. But you're doing it in such a way that honors people.
Yeah.
And if you're going to honor people, then you are going to grow and make sure that your coffee roast tastes better, are more pleasing to the community and the culture. You're intentionally learning your culture, right?
Yeah.
In your area. So here you are now. What's next? Where is your vision going for Henry's House of Coffee and carrying the tradition forward? Are your kids interested? I mean, how is that? What's the fourth generation looking like?
I know. I get that question a lot about, are my kids interested? One thing that I've done different than what my dad does, you know, my dad being old school, like you're coming to work on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've done with my kids, I have three boys and each one of them has different interests and personalities. And so as they were growing up and are growing up, I try to have different conversations with them about the business that's related to their needs and wants and see if that, you know, would be something they'd interested. For example, my oldest is going to UC San Diego right now. He's studying linguistics. When he was in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, I would talk to him about where we get the coffee from, the different countries. So, you know, then he starts asking about the languages from there and the traditions of those specific areas and how Kenya is unique from Ethiopia or Yemen and that stuff like that. My youngest son, you know, was the Lego kid, loves building stuff. And so for him, when he comes to the shop, we're talking about the equipment that we're using. How does the roasting machine work? How do grinders work? We have to clean it. Here are the tools, you know, those kinds of things. And at the end of the day, I pray about it. I mean, it's not in my hands. It's in God's hands. He will guide me through it. I've got three boys. My sister has three children of her own as well. If they're interested, same thing. So I'm not concerned. I feel like the legacy will live on as long as I don't mess it up, Bill.
I think you're doing great, Hrog. And I mean, you're still there. And
yeah.
That's a good sign.
I'm not going anywhere.
If you were to impart some wisdom to somebody who's just thinking about getting into the coffee business, what are a few words, a few takeaway points, you know, with your generational history of what you've been doing?
Well, with the coffee industry specifically, you have to, before you do anything, you really have to figure out what your niche is. Like, what's your story? What's going to make you unique and different?
Yep.
Because that will set everything from your branding to your logos to your signs. You know, you really got to sit down. I tell people all the time, the fun stuff is buying the equipment and renting and the boring stuff is just sitting in your desk and thinking, like, what's my elevator pitch in 15 seconds when I meet somebody and they say, oh, you own a coffee roasting company? Like, how are you going to tell them that, like, what's different about you? That's the number one suggestion I give. And the second thing is, you got to realize the industry is hard. Having a coffee shop is really, really challenging. Depending on where you're located, we're in San Francisco, one of the hardest places to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Where it comes to, you know, rent, HR, staff stuff. Obviously, the equipment is expensive. So those are the two things that I mentioned. But if they're considering roasting, then the most tangible answer I give them always, and, you know, credit to you guys, is this is the roaster that I use. I've used them for 40 years. I've been with them for 40 years. Think about that for a second. I don't have any desire to go anywhere else. It just works. We put this thing through and through. We've only had two machines in 40 years. So think about that, you know. It's a beast. Simple. I remember my dad always telling me, it's just simple. And that's what you want. You want it to be simple. Because when stuff breaks, I can go to the local parts store. I can get stuff. And so I'm always telling them, look, they've got different sizes from the baby all the way to the beast. And they're fantastic to work with because I've been with them for that long, 40 years. And so it shows some credibility where people are like, why are you telling them secrets? I'm like, it's not a secret. You can go and look up coffee roasters. There's many of them. But the one that I go with, 40 years, is a San Franciscan. There's no other decision for me.
I really appreciate your kind words, Frog. And, well, your family has been special to us. I mean, we are a family company too, and plan on staying that way. And so, yeah, I think that it's always been my desire to help people, you know, take the step like out of corporate and into business, like you did.
Yeah.
And to facilitate as much as possible, because like I said, it's hard, it's challenging, but it's your hard and it's your challenging.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's giving me a review, Bill. It's on.
The review oftentimes is at the cash register. And that keeps you on your toes though. But it's always that challenge is always there. And, you know, it's like sailing, and you got smooth sailing and you got rough sailing.
Yeah.
But you're still sailing, right?
Yeah.
So, well, listen, Rog, I really appreciate your time. And I'm sure that your message and your words have been an encouragement to people. And if someone wants to try your smooth Arminian coffee, how would they get a hold of some of that?
Yeah, if you're in the area, if you're in San Francisco, you can come by our shop. We're in the Sunset District. But if you're not, and we have a website, henryshouseofcoffee.com. Place your order there, and we'll roast and ship it to you all over the U.S.
So that's Henry's, no apostrophe, and that's HENRYS, House of Coffee, all one word, Henry's House of Coffee. And again, thank you for being on. Your dad was special to us, and as are you and your whole family, to my family as well.
It's an honor.
Thanks again.
And thank you, Bill.
We wish you very well and hope to see you again soon.
Yeah.
Okay. And see you later. Bye.
Bye.
The art of roasting coffee is all about chasing flavor. Every batch tells you something. The pace of the dry phase, how the beans respond to heat, how development time shapes sweetness and body. San Franciscan roasters are built by roastmasters. They speak your language with the responsiveness to follow your instincts, to push or pull heat at the right moment, exactly when the coffee asks for it. Each San Franciscan roaster is handcrafted in the USA from 100% American steel, engineered for precision, balance, and that perfect control between conduction and convection that lets the coffee truly shine. Because great roasts aren't measured, they're tasted.